Joseph.
The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners. Welcome to the 22nd edition of the Center Steer Podcast. Technically, it is episode 22.2. I'll explain that in a moment. It is January 25th, 2015, from Western Pennsylvania. I am John Costage, your host.
I'm Harold.
And I'm Dave.
On Skype, we have from the Green Mountain State.
Hello, this is Morgan.
And our special guest today, who is going to leave us in 5 minutes, is Dan Cole. And I'll explain all this in just a moment. Dan, say hi to us.
How's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Yes. So we've been rehearsing for the past hour because GarageBand has now died on me twice. And Dan has a hard stop here in about 5 minutes, and he's going to have to go. So we will soldier on without Dan and let him go do his business. And we will reschedule him for February. We'll reschedule him for February. Hope we work out our technical difficulties and then have him join us for a proper, longer discussion. And but Dan, I wanted to thank you for the 4x4 podcast. It was one of the inspirations for this podcast. When I went out a couple years ago looking for podcasts about Land Rovers and off-roading and 4x4, yours is one of the only ones that was out there that I recall and also doing a great job. That's my first thing, is I want to say thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you for the kind words. I guess that means I'm at least doing something with SEO right. You know, it's always the hardest part is having people find the show.
Yes, I found it on iTunes, as I recall. So that actually worked, which was good. And I also want to thank you for your your Christmas holiday gift guide. As a result of that, I bought two heated seats for my Series 3 109, and they're killer, just absolutely wonderful. Plug them in. You got heated seats. Your hiney is nice and warm, and it helps to warm the core. So that you even though my hands got a little chilly driving, it was nice to have a warm core. So thanks for finding those and posting that and letting everybody know about the heated seats. I highly recommend for any serious truck owner the $30 heated seats from Amazon.
Yeah, super economical way to get some warmth in your vehicle. So I also have that one. I love it. Love it. Put it to work all the time, except for now while I'm riding my bike to work and commuting.
What kind of bike are you riding?
It's actually a pedal power giant mountain bike. I live pretty close to where I go to school, and it's unfortunately not all downhill to school. so I get to pedal and keep myself warm.
And where is this?
Eventually. This is in Kansas, just outside Kansas City.
Gotcha.
Is that near Route 66?
It's closer actually to the Oregon Trail. I'm actually working with some guys in Oregon that are planning on retracing the Oregon Trail. And so just a weekend or two ago, I went to the Frontier Trails National Museum in Independence, Missouri to get some education on that. And I'm going to help them plot out their best course to see some of the fantastic sights of Kansas. That's not a thing. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Say it with a straight face.
I've driven through Kansas. I completely understand.
The fantastic what of Kansas?
Yes.
Yeah, I know it. I couldn't. I tried.
Poor Kansas. There were a couple of Frank Lloyd Wright houses in Kansas, but that was about all I could come up with that was interested me.
There's a couple of Wright houses pretty much anywhere, but
you're right.
If you look hard enough.
Some of the best ones are here in southwestern Pennsylvania.
Yeah, if you do a Google search for landmarks in Texas or in Kansas, you'll find them all on a single page without having to scroll.
Well played. All right. Well, you really need to go. And we have had GarageBand fail on us twice. And I'd love to deliver as promised and have you talk about all the things we want to talk about. Consider that we've done a rehearsal twice now, so hopefully when we really do this in February and all goes well and we have everything better, we'll have done this right.
This will be a teaser for next month.
That's it, a teaser. Yeah, is there anything you want to tease when we actually talk to you in a month?
Well, I've hit publish on episode 92 with an interview with the guy that invented the campfire in a can for, the outdoor lifestyle enthusiasts. I've also got interviews lined up for the four-wheel camper, so you can slide that. It's a slide-in camper setup for any kind of pickup truck. I've spoken with the guys over there on the East Coast in the Washington, D.C. area, the dirt road trip. I think, Morgan, you may have bumped into them. They try to visit Vermont and those areas as well.
Very
and
nice.
A couple of other cool things coming up. So, of course, there's also a large back catalog. As I said, I hit publish on episode 92. So there's over 100 things to listen to if you subscribe to the podcast. It's a pretty deep catalog at this point.
And your website is where?
It's the 4x4podcast.com, and that's 4x4, like you would find it on a proper off-road vehicle.
Yes, 4x4, the best 4x4 by far.
Exactly.
It's a Land Rover thing. Yeah. Dan, thanks very much. We will let you go. I do apologize for the technical difficulties. I know we had a good conversation. It was going well, and the rehearsals are great.
but no, it's worked out well. Now I can worm my way into more episodes of the Center Steer podcast.
That was your plan.
It's all part of the master plan.
Exactly. He's going to take over the universe. Dan, thanks.
Excellent.
Thanks very much, Dan.
All right. I'll talk to y'all later.
All right. Bye-bye. All right.
Thanks, Dan.
Bye.
Thanks.
And now it's time for the news. First thing up is Jag Land Rover is going to put diesels throughout the entire line, nearly. Looks like about 80% of the line will get diesels, and they will come to the United States.
It's about
we
time.
We just all say thank you, thank you, thank you. It is way too late.
Clearly. So
it seems they've been listening.
I certainly hope so.
They are expected to offer 20 to 30% improvement in fuel economy compared with gasoline, depending on the vehicle.
At least.
And, although with the plummeting gas prices right now in the United States, I think it might be a little more difficult if they were to bring the diesels out. But I think those gas prices are going to go back up.
Yeah, so it's a tough sell in today's market, but that's not permanent.
No, I don't think their plan is even this year. I think it's starting in 16 is when the actual diesels would arrive. So you still got a year to go, and I think gas prices will go back up by then.
I'd be surprised if they didn't.
Yeah,
and there are some areas in the country, like up here in northern Vermont, where the prices are still about 50 cents more expensive than the rest of the country. So while it's a nice break, it's still not enough.
That includes the western Pennsylvania. We're at like $2.35 or something for regular unleaded.
Yeah, I'm guessing that, Morgan, you're a lot higher than that.
We're up around $2.45, I think we finally dipped down to.
Okay. And they tell us it's because we're at the end of all the pipelines.
They took advantage of the dropping prices to raise the tax on gasoline a little bit.
That was happening already. No, the rise in the gas tax was already occurring. It was scheduled to occur.
It erased
some of the gains that was already occurring. But every time you hear this, and this is not just this time, but even in the past, is that when ours comes, I think from the East Coast, and we're at the end of that logistics line for gasoline. So that's why it's the longer it takes to get to us, and it's more expensive. That's what they claim.
Let me just say, I just paid $1.91 in Wintersville, Ohio yesterday.
Because they're on the other side of the pipeline, and for some reason, but they're, of course, Ohio taxes are cheaper, so it does affect overall. But yeah, it's Pennsylvania, at least Western Pennsylvania, is not well positioned for having cheaper gas. Anywho, so look for new diesels coming in North America, which hopefully will trickle down to all of us eventually so we can have the diesels that we would like, even though that's the ticket for us. Although having, Steve couldn't join us today for the podcast, but, Steve would tell you that gasoline is all the rage. That's what everybody wants. That's the ticket in the UK.
If you can afford it.
That's the problem there, yes. Although it's
a testosterone thing over there for them, the bragging rights to say you actually have gasoline. I think it's maybe a sign that you actually can afford such a thing.
Pretty much, yeah.
A sign of affluence.
Yes.
Here's a thought for you. Overlanding versus off-roading. Gasoline versus diesel. I've watched people with diesel Defenders struggle to spin up their tires to clear the lugs. But with a gas engine, you just mash the throttle down and go. So
you're saying
they're doing a lot of off-roading over there versus actual overlanding. And I think the diesel is probably a lot more suited to overlanding.
Yeah, you can go a lot farther on a tank of diesel.
Right. I think there's something to be said for that, Dave. I mean, I think there's overlanding. The diesel seems to be better, you know, in for distance constant. You're having that constant steady pressure on the fuel, and you want to get there, whereas gasoline's a little faster on the uptake, quicker horsepower, faster.
Well, I think the diesel is more effective for rock crawling and things that are done at low speeds. But I think where Dave's comparison comes in is when you're in mud, when you need to be able to spin those tires and clear out all the mud that's stuck in the tires, you know, nothing gets RPM going better than gasoline.
Yeah.
And, you know, it also, you take a smaller, damper country and a larger country with more varied terrain, you know, just, in the UK, you're doing a lot. It's a smaller country. You're not traveling quite as far. It's
you're probably
traditionally a damper
mud.
Country, more mud, but here in the US, we have so much more varied terrain and going from point A to point B is much farther.
Right.
In most cases.
Yep. Well, and you can't discount taxes. Taxes certainly have an effect what's what. And, you know, in the UK, taxes were lower on diesel. They have started to change that now, and they're raising the tax on diesel since everybody switched over. In the United States, taxes are typically higher on diesel than they are on gasoline. So there's something to be said for that, that affects the overall discussion too.
And the other thing to think about too is it's not just about performance and about economy, but a diesel engine typically lasts at least twice as long as its corresponding gasoline engine, just because of the way they're made, and the fuel itself is much easier on the engine. They last longer.
Well, they don't burn as hot too, right? The lower
not
temperature?
Necessarily.
Yeah? Okay,
but you know, number one, the diesels tend to be a little bit. There's more mass in the block to absorb all of the violent explosions. They're heavier. They're more robustly constructed, if you will. Mm-hmm. But if you actually look chemically at the fuels, gasoline is a solvent. You get gasoline condensing inside the cylinder of your engine because there's a little too much of it. Maybe it washes any lubricant you have in there down. Whereas diesel is an oil, so it's self-lubricating. And so that's why the engines don't wear out anywhere near as fast.
Good point. Moving on in the news, JLR plans to merge their dealerships together. They had been kind of rumored, I think, but it sounds like they are actually going to make a point of merging as many of the dealerships as they can by 2020. Certainly in the UK, there's things they can't do because of land and, you know, where things are located. But we've seen this here in the United States, but it looks like they're pushing to put Jag and Land Rover together. Reason I bring it up is... You know, it could have with Jaguar now coming out with the SUV. I don't know how is this going to affect sales. In my mind, the old days, at least in my head, you know, Jaguar had cars, Land Rover had trucks,
as it should be.
And now they're going to be in the same place, but Jag's going to have an SUV. I guess I'm not. Maybe it's the SUV I have a problem with.
Well, that's part of it. I think it's really not going to make that much of a difference because from what I've seen, most of the Jag dealers are Land Rover dealers already. There's not that many that are standalones anymore. They've been merging for quite a while, perhaps because they had complementary product lines. And yeah, you're right. I think now it's kind of interesting in terms of what's the competition going to be. But how is that really any different from back in the day when you had a GM dealer that they handled Buicks and Oldsmobiles?
Well, good point. Yeah, and they literally were the same car.
Right, yeah. Just different chrome.
Right, yes. I did like my Oldsmobiles. So it is the year of the Defender. And Land Rover, as we phase out, well, not we personally, but as Land Rover phases out the Defender at the end of 2015, they have kicked off a whole year of celebrations. One of the things they've done to kick that off was they went to the real ancestral home of Land Rover and carved drew a 1 kilometer large outline of a modernish Defender in the sand, very similar to what the Wilkes brothers did to sketch out the design of the first Land Rover in the sand back in Red Wharf Bay. And so they did that. If you've not seen the video, we'll have a link on our show notes, but you need to see it. It's really cool.
It is very cool. Very cool. It commemorates the event whereby the Wilkes brothers were first talking about the need for this vehicle, and one of them literally picked up a stick and just drew in the sand what he thought it should look like. And this is, of course, the macro version of that.
It's impressive. It, you know, to pull that off. But also, they actually did include, I think, was it actually Huey and one of the Wilkes brothers were in the procession that did the drawing.
I believe some of the family members were there. I don't believe Huey was. I'm trying to. I'll look at the article.
Well, I know they they interviewed the descendants of the two Wilkes brothers.
Right. They did use one of the early series ones. I thought it was Huey, but I could be wrong.
The article does not say that it was. It just says a Land Rover series 1, 2, 3 were joined on the beach by a 90 from the 80s, a Defender 90 hardtop, and a Defender 110 station wagon. The Immaculate Series 2 once belonged to the Wilkes family, and in memory of the moment originally enacted by their father's cousins Stephen and Nick Wilkes, the sons of Maurice and Spencer Wilkes, respectively, were on hand to take part.
Yes, sorry. That I said one of the Wilkes brothers, but I meant one of the sons.
This would be the Wilkes cousins.
Exactly.
The fact that there were Wilkes family members there, I think, is enough. That was you're forgiven. You're forgiven.
Absolutely. Morgan, yes. Well, thank you.
But please check out the video. It's really cool. It's like a minute and 37 seconds. It's just, again, Land Rover's really good at marketing. I think they did a nice job of doing that. It's a neat video. It's worth your time to see if you've not already seen it. It's massive too. This thing's just actually massive. So, along the lines, as part of the celebration activities, they are coming out with and the series is not the right word here. They call them celebration series, but there are three different Defenders that represent a different aspect.
Special editions, if you will.
Special edition. That's a much, much better word. And so they're going to come out with three of those, and they're going to be available, of course, everywhere but North America for you to buy. There's a Heritage Edition in green with a white roof, an Adventure Edition with extra underbody cladding and off-road tires, and a top-of-the-line Autobiography Edition based on the closed-roof, short-wheel-based Defender 90 station wagon. And so if you are outside of America and Canada and you this may be one of the ones for you.
I really like the Heritage Edition, the throwback looks to it. It just really do it for me. But if I was to own one of those, if I could own one of those, it would probably be the Adventure Edition.
I think just because of the name, yeah.
It's that, and I like the look of it. I like it. It evokes the G4 edition discos of 15 years ago. I think it's properly kitted. It's a very good color combination. Really what I'm saying is I guess I need to convince them to let me have two.
I don't
need the Autobiography, the expensive one, but
no, I don't
the
either.
Other two I really need.
Yes, I'm with you. The green one, I like the looks of. I'm not crazy about the color, but I really don't like the front fascia now of the Defender. And when they do this two-color combination of that black and orange, I really don't like the look.
Well, that was the classic look that they did on the disco, and I like it for that reason.
Okay. But
the green in the Heritage Edition is a classic color that you found, very much like the pastel green on the series trucks. It's not quite the same color, but it reminds you of that. And it looks like they've done the top in limestone, which is also
very period. I like that, yeah.
All that I can say is that if you're going to call it an Adventure Edition, it ought to be painted sand glow.
Ooh, that would be a nice option. Well, you know why it's not? Because they since they broke away from Camel Trophy and went to the G4 edition, their own thing, that's why it had to be the G4 orangey color.
Yeah, you almost wonder if maybe Camel ended up with the rights to that color.
Wasn't it called like Camel Sanglow or Sanglow Camel something?
There's a guy that I can't think what his name is. He just painted a D1, and it's actually a case color. So Camel might own the exact color, but they could get so close that it would be the same.
So if you happen to be outside of North America and you buy one and you want us to test drive it for you, give us a call. We'll be happy to see if we can find our way somewhere and check one of those out. That'd be cool. along the lines, and as part of the celebration, they are doing special tours now at Sully Hall for the Defender line. And if you, it's called the Celebration Tour or Celebration Line Tour.
So apparently you are not quite as special as you thought you might
have
been.
I know. Now I'm starting to think it was like a prototype testing to see how that would go, I guess.
You didn't break anything, so they figured everybody else is okay?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, the Americans are were here, and it was fine. There are, and we'll have, Oval News had pictures of the assembly line, so that they're good pictures to see. And we'll have a link, of course, in the show notes for that.
Our friends over at Land Rovers Live had a segment on their show too.
They did, and that video is available on Land Rovers Live. Not the most recent, which is I think episode 14, but I think you want to go to episode 13. And I apologize, Matt, if I got the episode wrong. But yeah, they had that part of the video of that.
And I think
tour.
Didn't they show the video of the drawing in the sand too?
I think he had that on his show too. Yes.
So yeah, go to his show. You get all the cool stuff.
You can listen to our show too.
Well, you're done listening to our show, go to his show.
All right, that's fair. That's fair.
Link to it from our site.
It is. There'll be a link to our site. So there's a special tour at Sully Hall for the Heritage Line. You wanted to see that. They also have now special display, which includes Yui. And maybe that's Morgan, where you were thinking about Yui, and I think it's now at Sully Hall.
Yeah. I think that is where I was confusing it. And that is a fairly impressive display. They pulled a lot of experts and historians in the field to help recreate the Series 1 production line as a display.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the Series 1, yes, that's a good point to mention. Yeah, the current production line you can tour, and then there's a special static display of the Series 1 having been built. And that's, I think they're going to keep that, too. After they stopped the Defender line, there was discussion of it staying as kind of like a tourist piece.
Nice.
So
and
if you don't...
I know that one of the people involved with that was Michael Bishop, who wrote So They Found Our Engineer.
Right. So if you don't get to Sully Hall this year to see the Defender line in person, in the future you should be able to watch the Series 1 production line as a static display. So along those lines, Car Scoops put out a video that's called "This Is How a Land Rover Defender Should Be Driven Off-Road." With all due respect to them, that's ignore that. The reason I find the video interesting is because they actually go on the Land Rover Experience, and they go on the off-road tour with a Defender, and they drive it on that course. So if you want to see what the course is like in a Defender, watch the video. It's not... if you've been off-road, you know what to do. You understand what's happening. You're not going to learn anything. I don't think they're breaking any ground with that title about this is how it should be driven. But it's just interesting video to see, because if you want to see what their tour's like, and it's a little bit about what I experienced when I did it.
Since you weren't nice enough to take a camera with you.
I was not allowed.
Really?
I was not allowed to video. No, he would take pictures of me, but you couldn't video.
So this took special permission for these people to do it.
I think they got special permission. Yeah,
wow. Right.
I think it's probably part of this year's celebration business.
Okay.
So that's my guess.
So you were there too soon.
Yeah, that's it. I was there too soon. And so if you want to see what that tour is like, that experience is like off-road, take that. Of course, they try to say this is how you should drive it, and this is it's wonderful and it's great, and it's how it's like an analog truck. Yeah, but what they don't talk about that I experienced was the Defender I drove, and I suspect theirs is the same way. It had anti-stall technology. It was a stick. It was a diesel, but it still had anti-stall technology. You had to force it to stall. You almost had to turn off the engine to get it to stall. That's not analog anymore. That's not what this guy's talking about. That's another reason why I kind of disagree with...
However, it is the exact opposite of almost all computerized diesels of today.
True. Yes, my Jetta.
Your Jetta being a shining case in point.
I know, but it's interesting how they're talking about how you should drive it. It's hard. It's it's an analog truck, and it's you can't do anything. And like, dude, it's not going to stall because it's anti-stall technology, which makes it easier to drive than he's purporting.
I'm not impressed by that actually. Anyway, because your 109 is about as close to anti-stall as you can get, and it's all mechanical.
That's true. The 109 is difficult.
You have to try to stall it.
Yeah, that's true. It barely lugs too. It you think it's going to, and it doesn't. So check out that video. We'll have the show notes to it if you want to see what the Land Rover Experience is like. And another video that I found very interesting, and this is a new modern one. And this goes to Land Rover and their marketing. It's just called Land Rover New Discovery Sport, and it's an active lifestyle video. It's 3.5 minutes long, just well done, really neat. But you know, these it's you know, modern family, modern lifestyle. They've obviously got a couple bucks, a couple pounds, to a couple coins to their name, and they're going out and doing stuff. And they use, and you get to see the Defender Sport in action. That's the big thing.
Looks like it's on the YouTube.
It is on the YouTube. We will have a link to. Yeah, Land Rover has a channel on the YouTube, so you should subscribe to that, and you can see all this cool stuff. Speaking of the Discovery Sport, our sometimes correspondent friend Jeff Aronson of Rovers Magazine was in Iceland this week, and I know he got to drive the new Disco Sport. I saw a couple posts on his on Facebook, but hopefully we'll have him on the podcast soon.
I saw that he held up the line at customs coming through because the customs officer wanted to talk Land Rovers.
I missed that one. Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Not surprised. So hopefully we'll have him on the podcast maybe in February, maybe in March. I'm not sure with us having technical difficulties with Dan. I want Dan back as soon as possible. That's the news for January of 2015. We will be back after the M-Word with our new Heritage segment.
This weekend marks 34 years since I bought my first car and thus began my lifelong love affair with the British Roadster. It was a beautiful sunny day, and at 50 degrees, it was a good 75 degrees warmer than the typical late January day in southern Minnesota. It was the perfect day for the maiden voyage of a virgin car owner. Earlier in the week, I'd been casually leafing through the classified section of the local paper, not really looking for anything in particular, when I spotted an advert for a 68 Triumph, good condition, $850. Before I knew what was happening, I had called for directions and made an appointment to see it. When I got there, the lady told me it was her son's car, and that she really didn't know anything about it. I was welcome to look it over all I wanted, and she handed me the keys in case I wanted to drive it. I looked at everything I could think of, and I took several pages of notes. I was trying to be careful and objective, but there were only two facts that really mattered. It was a sports car, and I had just enough money to buy it. If there was any doubt whatsoever, a short drive around the neighborhood took care of that. My dad, however, took some convincing. He didn't believe that kids should be playing with cars. They should be concentrating only on school until they're out of college and they have a career. Cars were just a machine to get you from one place to another when there weren't any better options. Clearly, he was misguided and completely ignorant. Fortunately, my older brother had set a precedent for owning cars in high school, and my dad figured this was one of those things that I was going to be persistent about. So he relented, and we made arrangements to go get the car on Saturday. The unseasonably warm weather was most fortuitous, as the car was a bit of a handful on the drive home. I was having difficulty finding the proper finesse with the clutch pedal, made worse by the fact that the seats were not bolted to the floor. Despite my best efforts, it was really hard not to light up the tires at every stop. Sure, it was fun the first couple times, but then it was just frustrating. I was expecting a lecture from my dad when we got home, but instead he just told me it looked like something was wrong with the clutch. Item number one on my to-do list: find a way to keep the seats from moving around while driving. It didn't take long for the car to attract a lot of attention at school. Of course, the ridiculous Corvette yellow paint job didn't allow it to blend in with the crowd. One of my shop teachers told me he had looked at the car, but had decided not to buy it because it looked like way too much work. That should have been a big warning sign, but I was a teenager, so of course I knew I could handle it. Disassembly was an interesting procedure, quite unlike anything I've encountered since. I discovered so much body filler that wrenches were useless for removing body panels. An axe was the tool of choice. Under all the filler was a month's worth of wadded-up newspaper. The floor had been replaced with half-inch plywood, covered with the cheapest outdoor carpet available, in AstroTurf green, of course. This explains why the seats weren't bolted down. A year and a half, and all my money later, the car was mostly done, just in time to head off to college. It wasn't the show-quality restoration I had hoped for, but it was not bad for a first attempt, especially since I did it at home with minimal tools and no experience. The following summer, I was back home, fixing the things I failed to fix right the first time. I failed to properly address the rusty frame, so it failed on me. Fortunately, I found a parts car in a local junkyard, and I brought it home for the frame. Another big mess in the driveway that my dad didn't appreciate. Looking back, I learned many things from that car. Not just the obvious details of how to fix this or how to fix that, but many less obvious things like what not to do and why. Most important were the lessons that can't be learned at school. Emotions always get in the way of good judgment. It will always take more time and more money than you think it will. If someone who knows a lot more than you says it's too much work, it probably is too much work. It's not as good as the ad says it is. Previous owners are all idiots. There are two ways to do things. Either do it right or do it over. Details you ignore will come back to haunt you later. And finally, failure is sometimes expensive, but still the most effective way to learn anything. If I could do it all over again, would I? Probably not with that car. Do I regret it? Absolutely not. It may have cost me all my money and all my time, but the experience was priceless for the value of the lessons I learned.
Welcome back to the Center Steer Podcast for January 2015. This is the year of the Defender, and it's also going to be a new segment starting this year for us. We're going to call it the Heritage Segment. That's the best name I have for it so far. If you have a better name for us, let us know. I'll send you something. I'm sure I can send you something if we come up with a good name for the moment. But it's got to have heritage in it. And the reason for it, the intent of this segment is going to be every month we want to talk about old Land Rover models, which I think is the focus and the interest of most of our listeners and potential listeners. We talk a lot about the newer vehicles and current and what's coming, but we should talk about what's happened and what you can do to keep your truck on the road, where you can take your truck, and things you can do with it. So we're going to talk about all models, but it can't be the current model, so it's got to be model minus one.
This is the podcast within the podcast.
To kick this off, we are going to interview and talk to our very own current panelist and who's been with us since the beginning, Morgan, who runs SeriesParts.com. Say hi, Morgan.
Hi, and thanks again.
Glad to have you here on the show this time.
Exactly. It's nice to be here for once.
Yes. So, and you actually get to talk and talk without being interrupted.
Oh, wow.
Maybe.
This should be interesting.
So how did Series Parts get started?
Let's see. I had actually been searching around for a couple of years for a series Land Rover after deciding that that's what I wanted to drive. Actually happened to be a couple years before Hurricane Irene wiped out most of the roads in Vermont. We actually had some severe flooding and I have a long commute, so I was looking around for something that was a little easier to work on. I've been through many, many vehicles. So something I could just fix anywhere, something that had a little better clearance and could deal with winters and flooding and all sorts of anything that the, you know, elements could throw at us here in Vermont. And so somewhere, I think it was like early to mid 2009, I picked up a Series 3 88, And I had already sort of built out in an RSS reader or some kind of software like that, whole bunch of feeds for custom searches on Craigslist and eBay for finding these vehicles and finding parts. And that Land Rover I bought turned out to be a little rougher than I had hoped.
They always are.
They always are. I did not heed the age-old advice to skip over that first Land Rover you look at. And so I ended up spending a little more time with the Land Rover either parked in my garage or, sorry, parked in my driveway or at the garage. So I sort of spent that time taking what I had built up manually and built it into a website. And I also spent a fair amount of time just sort of frequenting the forums and sort of gathering lists of parts suppliers and garages that were nearby that I could take advantage of for my repairs and any projects related to that. So it sort of started there, just sort of gathering resources for myself and then realizing that I was answering questions on forums as to, you know, where people could go. And that I really should just publish this information.
So you've been running since 2009?
I think the site had I bought the domain in 2009, I think. I probably did most of my development 2010, and it officially went live in early 2011.
So how many parts suppliers do you link to now, and exactly how does it work?
Yeah, currently I list about, I think I have 97 right now. Actually, it's 95. And because there's a couple that have disappeared, I've had to pull off the site. I actually have a queue of like another 20 or 30 that I just haven't gotten to and vet and list. So I sort of do that manually.
So that's how you get it. So you find a supplier, and I guess these are what, anywhere in the world, or you only look in English speaking countries, and then you verify that they have parts.
Yeah, basically, anytime I hear of a parts supplier for Land Rover parts, I sort of check them over, see where they are, whether they actually support series vehicles. That's the big thing for me. Because you find a lot of suppliers that say, oh yeah, we do everything. But then you find out that really, no, they, they mean back to Defenders, but not series. So yeah, I go through and sort of do a basic vetting of them, make sure I have accurate contact info. And I try not to limit it to English speaking countries. I think the furthest away one I have is in, Indonesia. I have a garage that's listed out there.
And these are all new parts, or are these used, or both?
Both. So I do parts suppliers. So new parts, used parts, also aftermarket parts. So there's lots of people making custom parts for series Rovers. Mm-hmm. I list them. I also list any garages who specialize in series Land Rovers.
I was going to say, you have a listing of service providers because I'm in it.
Yes, you are.
Very good. Very good. So you not only list parts, but you list service providers as in mechanics and technicians. How do you vet them, or is it just more of a, hey, add me to the list?
I have a few people who have said, hey, add me to the list. But for the most part, I'm vetting them. Just finding them and saying, you know, do you actually support series vehicles? Usually it's pretty easy to tell if somebody can do anything with old British motors. So, and wiring and all of that.
Is there something you don't, you specifically exclude? You said you do series. I guess you're not doing any Range Rover Classics. You're not doing Disco Ones.
Right. At this point, you know, I won't exclude a business if they do series and newer. I absolutely will list them for that. But if there's somebody who's really only doing RRC parts or disco parts, you know, I don't add them to the list. But most people have some sort of crossover. Beyond that, then I also took that manual, the sort of RSS feeds and searches that I had built, and ported that over. So it's something anybody can browse. So, you know, I'm not offering parts myself, but I have software that pulls in all of the series Land Rover listings from all of the Craigslist sites around the world. I do the same for eBay. Currently fighting with eBay a little bit, not the company themselves, but they've changed the way some of their search engine stuff has worked. So I'm getting a lot more non-series parts now than I was in the past. So, you know, my spare time gets spent, trying to keep up with eBay and Craigslist for their changes. And I do have some other suppliers, sites that I pull parts in from as well.
Do you make any money from any of this, or is this just a purely labor of love?
Primarily labor of love. I think I now, after all these years, I'm up to somewhere $5 a month and under in earnings. So, yeah.
And where does that come from?
That's mostly like advertising.
Hmm. So you get a little bit of advertising. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's basically just through Google AdSense. So I don't really want to be swayed by any particular company listing through me. So they're welcome to compete on lowest price on the site.
Is there any major supplier that you can't get to for some reason that is not included in your search?
There probably are some that are still in my queue that I just haven't added yet, but there shouldn't be that many.
I mean, so there's no one who explicitly you don't have because they don't allow you.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't see the point in them not wanting to be on his search.
I wouldn't either, but you never know. Someone might, you know, want exclusive visits. Or
some people are just stupid.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. It's sort of, you know, free advertising for anybody. I really just try to, you know, connect people with who are owners with, you know, parts suppliers and garages. Help both sides of the coin there.
Are there any tips that you can give to people visiting your site on using it more effectively, or some secret thing that, you know, if you do this, all of a sudden, you know, this, all this stuff appears?
Make it easier? Absolutely. I have a few basic searches on just the homepage that, you know, you can find if you're looking for new or old stock parts. I have those. It'll break down those searches for you. Same thing you can get if you're looking for like chassis or bulkhead stuff.
So those are what those – you have like tiles there on the front page. So those are actually searches you can click on that are built in.
Yeah, so those will refine it down. The search is actually pretty powerful. So in the frequently asked questions, there's a little explanation of the search system. So you can actually narrow things down pretty nicely. One of the features I'm working up to is allowing people to have custom searches that will just notify them.
That'd be killer. That'd be excellent.
Absolutely.
It was not immediate until you told me. I didn't realize that those tiles there were actual search links to searches. I just assumed it was another way to get to the same search engine.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things I've experimented with the homepage a couple of times. I'm sure I'll continue to do that, try to make it a little clearer or make it easier.
Have you ever thought about in your list of suppliers and shops and that sort of thing, adding the ability to do like a profile where that particular vendor could add more information about what it is they do and what they specialize in?
Yeah, absolutely. I do have one thing that's a little hidden away right now, and I do intend to make it much more obvious. That is, if you hover over one of the businesses, you'll get a little tooltip with an explanation. For a number of businesses, I usually go through and just sort of put in the summary of what they do and my findings. But there's a couple of businesses who have contacted me, and I've updated that for them. So definitely want to make that something that's much more accessible to the business and to those browsing the site, because it's a little bit of an Easter egg right now, whereas it should be pretty prominent.
Interesting. Well, I'll have to get together with you on that.
You have an events section also on here. Is that events? You have a nice little calendar. Is that covering just North American events?
I try to cover events, especially in the UK. I do some in Europe as well. Basically anything that is mostly Land Rover centric, but especially welcomes series vehicles.
You don't have one here, Center Steer podcast recording on your calendar.
We haven't entirely opened that up to the public.
Yeah, that's not exactly a public event.
And nor will we. Yeah, maybe some way down the road we'll do a live stream and people can join in.
But. And if we actually knew when exactly it was going to be live online, the new episode, he could put that in his calendar, but that's hard to pinpoint because it depends on a lot of other things.
Many variables.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, if this were my full-time gig, then that might be a little better to happen, but it's not.
It would have to be a much different product.
And it's sort of the same for seriesparts.com for me. It's very much a spare time thing, so I try to pick those features that will offer the biggest bang for my development time. One of the most recent projects I did was adding the local maps. You can actually browse the parts suppliers and garages on a map and see what's local to you, actually including the parts, which is I still have to do some refinement there because it's a bit overwhelming in the UK right now. But it definitely is helpful.
I'm trying to access it right now, and it's showing me things in my immediate area. Pretty slick. That's very cool. Very cool. What do you have planned for the future? Like, what other improvements do you plan to make besides the save search feature?
Yeah. Currently the release that I can't remember exactly how far I am through. I think it's about 75% complete with the next release. It's mostly back-end tools for me to make sure that I manage the site that much faster, and get some of those, you know, businesses that are still stuck in the queue, get those live. And then beyond that, I have some refinements for eBay catch-up stuff, make sure that it's a little more accurate to just series parts. And then it is mostly creating user accounts so that people can pull in, you know, their searches, save those, make the site a little more mobile friendly. It's decent in landscape mode on a phone, but not great.
Dave is looking at it right now. Dave has entered the world of series ownership. Dave, why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened to you?
I bought a 1972 Land Rover Series 3 88 inch, or what's titled as a 72 Series 3 88 inch.
On average, the year is 72.
Oh, no, I understand that everything is older than 72 except for the bulkhead.
and perhaps the engine.
Yeah. Neither engine is is the original. It came with two engines, one diesel and one gas, which Harold used to own the gas one. So
yeah, I can tell you it's provenance.
I've actually seen and witnessed the diesel running and moving a vehicle around, so I know that it did run. So
what parts do you immediately need? How can
I need
Morgan help you?
Basically, I got a tub with a roof and a bulkhead bolted, and not even really bolted, vaguely attached to the frame, which was a more or less a rolling chassis. And then a bunch of parts to fill two pickup truck beds.
Wow.
So,
well, you're going to learn.
Yes, I am.
Maybe he'll be a new parts supplier.
Yeah, it's going to be a learning experience. I had, based on what I knew of the truck before, I had tentatively said, oh, I wanted to have this on the road in time for the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix.
And 6 months away.
And now I'm thinking about the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix 2016.
You might make it to a British Grand Prix at some point.
Yeah, there is that.
And that was very much the way it was for me as well.
How's yours coming along, Morgan? I know you're working, you have yours in under a tarp, 20 miles away? And
It's actually about 100 miles away.
Oh, wow.
Something like that, yeah.
So on Vermont roads, it takes you all day to get there.
It's about 2.5 hours. It's not too bad.
Yikes.
Far enough, you just don't want to dash over on a whim.
Yeah, it's true. I don't dash over as often as I would like to. But it's nice that you get there and there's really not much else to do other than work on the truck. So.
And how far along are you now?
I'm still in the disassembly stage. I've been stalled by winter and work. So, you know, I'll get back to it.
And trees.
Probably March. Yeah, and trees, yes.
That's right. The tree did it. So seriousparts.com is the website. Morgan is the owner, operator, driver, passenger of the website. And I recommend especially if you're a series truck owner, you're going to want to use this site. Go out, check it out. If you need a part, you need someone to help you to fix said vehicle, it's a good place to start. And thank you, Morgan, for doing what you did. Actually, that's the reason you're on the podcast, by the way, because I saw that site out there and I figured you had some clues to what was going on.
Totally. I appreciate that.
And then, you know, you had IT experience too. That was helpful in getting things set up.
Absolutely. I'm always taking submissions. So if there's anybody that I've missed on my listings or anything that you're specifically looking for, you can drop me an email. It's just info@seriesparts.com.
Can you have a counter for how many times you say absolutely?
I think that would be a pretty fast counter. Exactly.
That'd be one wicked drinking game.
It would, yeah, there's exactly, absolutely. I guess any word ends in an L-Y.
Morgan, an adverb.
I was trying to come up with another one.
Lolly, but, lolly, lolly, get your adverb here.
Exactly.
Lolly, lolly, get your adverb. So that's seriousparts.com. Go out and check it out. We will, of course, have a link from our own website back to that. And why don't you have a link to the Center Steer podcast, mister? Huh? Huh?
That's a very good question. I should be tossing that up there.
I have
a link to the Burma Bright Brotherhood, so Center Steer podcast should be right next to that.
It should be
I will get on that.
Prominent. You're a member of the podcast, and you know it's good cost promotion.
I don't know. Are we an event or are we a supplier?
I think you should. No, you should have a
no. It'll be on the homepage.
It's own thing.
Oh, we deserve one of those tiles on the homepage.
Yes, we do. We do. I think totally. We do. I think we do. Oh, that's pretty cool. I just little thing. If you hover over Sirius parts in the masthead, Land Rover pops out. That's really
it does.
That's really well. Why is that?
Because he can.
Because I can. Because I can't officially label as Land Rover parts. But
oh, that's true. It has those letters in the same order. Yes, the R O, the V, and the R.
Yes, you'll get a visit from the lawyers. Yeah, good call. Good call. So that's SiriusParts.com.
One of the things that's been sort of troubling me for a bit with your truck is the alternator. And for those who don't know John's truck, it's ex-military, which means it has that big honking 24-volt alternator on it. It's a cool piece of kit, but it's nobody over here understands it because it's not an off-the-shelf part. You won't find it listed for anything, you know, in any listing of Land Rover parts because it's military and it's not actually vehicle-specific. But the front bearing on the alternator has been going for a bit. It's been making some noise, and so I decided it was time to open up said alternator and have a good look, only to find out that, well, part of the problem is that some squatty at some point has put the seals in backwards, so the oil in the front bearing, of course, was never going to stay in there. And it's a very, very strange-looking bearing. I've looked at tried to source them out of some military surplus places in the UK, and it's a very expensive bearing and some very expensive seals that you need to keep the oil in the bearings because it's not a unitized sealed bearing. And I just, number one, I didn't want the lead time of trying to chase that down, and I didn't think John wanted a couple $100 worth of parts just to repair the alternator. So I got busy, did a little bit of searching, did some cross-referencing, and I actually found a modern-style sealed radial ball bearing that almost fit, did a little bit of machining, machined a spacer, and made it all fit. And so now it has a modern bearing that we can get off the shelf for cheap. And, John, you'll appreciate this. It actually cross-references to an axle bearing off of an Oldsmobile.
Yay! I like Oldsmobiles.
Thought you might like that part of it.
My first two cars were Oldsmobiles. Any specific Oldsmobile?
That I can't tell you. I knew you were going to ask, but all I could see, all it said was Oldsmobile.
Fair enough. Rocket 88.
You can pick a number. I don't care. It's an Oldsmobile part now running your alternator, and it works fine. It fits fine, and
good.
Now we have modern serviceability.
Great. So there's an example of, I think, a heritage comment moment. So if you have other – we're certainly open to ideas from the listeners. If you have something you want to hear about, you know, contact us and give us some ideas. But our plan here is every month to have this segment and talk about some new aspect of – or different aspect of the series truck ownership, of which – welcome, Dave.
Yeah.
Welcome to the club, Dave.
I also had another mod Harold put in consultation. We added LED lights into the interior because, you know, especially with a military truck, it's dark. I mean, dark is dark.
I have to pull the canvas top off every time I want to work in there because it's just too freaking dark.
Yeah,
even in my shop with all the lights on, it's too dark to see.
Can't see anything. Yeah, exactly. I have one of those gooseneck lights you can get in, and you know, that's it helps, but it's not perfect. Then you got to plug it in and probably unplug something else to put it in.
And when you're working on the electric system with the power off, it's kind of useless, isn't it?
But driving down the road, I from Amazon, they were like, I didn't want to say like under $5, maybe it was $6 for four strips of these. We ended up getting red LED lights. and they're about a, I'd say, what, a half foot strip of each of
lights. They are each 12 inches long.
They're a foot long, okay. And ended up putting them in the cabin, and there's two strips each on each side of the tub, and there's a nice little switch that Harold put in right by the door, so as soon as I open the door, I can hit the switch, and I got lights inside. And even driving down the road, I can turn it on.
And you can actually see where all the stuff down in your dashboard cubbies has fallen.
It's wonderful. It was really good. And I Harold doesn't know I did this. So yesterday, I went driving about 30 miles one way to visit a friend of mine. And I had the series. I'm going to take an adventure. I'm going to go down I-70. It's going to be great. And I get moving up, need diesel, pull into my local diesel purveyor. Filled up both tanks each side. They're like, you know what? It's cold. I think I get a free beverage. So I went in, got myself a hot tea, go back out to the truck. Where am I going to put it? Because, you know, there's no cup holders. But I did have a six pack. I was taking beer with me, and a six pack of beer. So I took one of the beers out, put the tea in, put it in on the battery cover next to me in the seat. Driving down the road, everything's fine. Get down the road, and then I had to make not a complete sudden stop. That doesn't happen in a series truck, but I made a stop and I had turned.
Sudden is a very relative term with a series truck.
Absolutely. And drink. And so the six pack is sitting next to me. I thought it was weighted sufficiently, except it's because the tea, because the cup didn't fit all the way firmly inside the entire holder. It goes forward and I spilled a full cup of mug of hot tea all over the transmission tunnel. It was very exciting. And there it goes. Oh, so for $1.48, that's fun.
You now have warm feet.
Thankfully, it went underneath the rubber. I had those rubber covers. It went underneath that. And I turned a light on to see what was. I was like, eh, whatever. I'll hose it out later. So
that's the benefit of a series truck.
Well, you have those wonderful door seals that let the water in and out. So
yes. And I also got new door tops on the 109. And that did help to keep the... keep out the wind, and it didn't rain. It was just a little bit of light snow, but it did keep the wind out. I'm waiting for a good rainstorm to see, because I'm sure it'll keep out the rain. My driver's one, while we stuck out just a little bit, and I would get a wet knee, you know, because all the rain would come in. Actually, something we did learn in putting those strips on, there's that rubber gasket that goes between the door top and the door bottom. There is a way to put that on, and you need to ensure that you put it on correctly, because there are drain holes on the bottom of your door tops, and you got to make sure those aren't covered and will properly let water out. So there's another series moment for you. How about that? A little heritage series moment for you to make sure you put those gaskets on correctly. Are they called gaskets? I guess it's a rubber strip, so
it might be called a rubber seal in their terminology, but yeah, it functions like a gasket between the two halves of the door,
and it keeps the doors kind of in just a little bit too, so they kind of close a little better. The doors now close; you have to give them a good shove to close them, which is actually helpful. They don't just automatically swing in and close on you.
Some of that has to do with the structure of the door top actually being there, so it doesn't just swing out of the way when you close the door.
It isn't all rusted away, yeah. So that's a little update on my series. And Dave, hopefully next month maybe we'll hear some things. If not, we'll talk about maybe – and also we'll talk about another system on the series truck.
Yeah, next month hopefully we'll be in full swing on the disassembly, assuming that it's not already disassembled by the time I get home with my wife and kids working.
Now, as I understand it, the kids are just randomly pulling bolts, and when you get home you're expected to know what they do and where they go and –
yeah, that's going to be an adventure in itself.
Because they're properly labeling them as they take them off, right? And they're putting them in the baggies, and they're writing on the baggie where the part came from,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the six-year-old. I'm sure she is.
Isn't this how she learns numbers?
She will accurately tell you which vehicle they've been removed from.
The Rover.
Exactly.
One of my five.
So thank you for listening today to the Center Steer podcast. This has been a January edition. We had technical difficulties, and hopefully we will have Dan Cole from the 4x4 podcast on very soon. We'll have a further, longer discussion. We talked to him already, and we lost the files completely. That was our technical problem. I don't know. So, but please take a moment to rate the podcast or contact us. Go out to centersteer.com, and there's links to everything out there. We are nearing our second anniversary. We're coming up on number 24, and we're certainly interested in your thoughts and ideas on the podcast, things we can do to improve, make it better. Am I talking too fast? Because I usually do. let me know. Doesn't mean I'll slow down. But the most important action you can take, especially if you enjoy the podcast, is to share it with your Land Rover friends, because it's good Rover karma. Have a good month. We'll talk to you in February.
The Center Steer theme song, Sunset Rider by the Tritons, is available from Mivio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mivio.com.
M-word, blah, 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 M-word, blah, 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 blah.
Hey, all right. I have a theme song now.
You do have a theme song. Blah, 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 blah.